Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Linamar Q3 2025 earnings call. At this time, all lines are in listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If at any time during this call you require immediate assistance, please press star zero for the operator. This call is being recorded on Wednesday, November 12th, 2025. I would now like to turn the conference over to Linda Hasenfratz, the Executive Chair. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our third quarter conference call. Before I begin, I'll draw your attention to the disclaimer that is currently being broadcast. Joining me this afternoon, as usual, are Jim Jarrell, our CEO and President, and Dale Schneider, our CFO, both of whom will be addressing the call formally. Also available for questions are Mark Stoddart and some other members of our corporate IR marketing, finance, and legal teams. I'll start us off with some highlights of the quarter. A good place to start is a quick reminder of the key value drivers that make Linamar such a great investment and how they played out this quarter. First, Linamar has a long track record of consistent, sustainable results driving out of our diverse business. Q3 was another good example with exceptional earnings growth in our mobility business, going a long way to offset very soft markets in our agricultural businesses. Being invested in both businesses helps trim big swings up and down in individual markets and leaves us with a more consistent, sustainable level of performance. Strong mobility performance this year will carry us to a bottom-line growth for the year, despite a tough year for industrial, just like 2 years ago when industrial took us to a profit for the year, despite a tough year in mobility. The second key point is our flexibility to mitigate risk. Our equipment is programmable, flexible equipment that can be used on a large variety of types of products across vehicle platforms and types of propulsion. The flexibility is allowing us to reallocate equipment from programs running under capacity to new launches, helping keep our capital bill down, as you saw again this quarter, down 30% over last year without restricting our ability to grow. Third, we've always run a prudent conservative balance sheet. We target keeping net debt to EBITDA under 1.5, and Q3 saw net debt to EBITDA actually at 0.76, so under one, an excellent level to be at given great opportunities in the market today. Lastly, returning the cash to shareholders is a key value creation driver at Linamar as well. You saw that play out this quarter with the renewal of our NCIB program for another 10% of outstanding shares. Okay, turning to highlights for the quarter, I would identify these as our most relevant accomplishments. First, we announced two exciting acquisitions for us with Aludyne Aluminum Casting Technologies in the U.S. and the GF Leipzig ductile iron casting facility for commercial vehicle components in Germany. In aggregate, they represent more than $1 billion in sales and will contribute in our normal operating earnings range. Aludyne is a company that was in distress, but with excellent technologies and a solid team, and we're excited to bring them into the Linamar family. GF Leipzig, similarly, has unique capabilities for very large ductile iron casting, well-suited for growth opportunities in Europe, again, with a great team, and we look forward to welcoming them to Linamar. Both acquisitions will feed our existing plants in North America and Europe with machining business, which creates exciting new growth opportunities. Jim will describe the acquisitions in more detail shortly. Secondly, we were thrilled with the excellent growth in our mobility segment earnings, up 88% and growing margins to the top end of our normal range. The impact of launches and operational efficiencies is having a big impact on the segment. And third, wow, what a great quarter in free cash flow, hitting over $320 million in the quarter, thanks to that careful management of that capacity. And finally, we continue to be modestly impacted by the myriad of U.S. tariffs in place and, in fact, are using the situation as an opportunity to chase new business with our automotive customers looking to onshore products from Asia and Europe and to chase acquisition opportunities with distressed suppliers. I'll come back to the tariff situation in just a moment. Turning to the numbers, we saw sales at $2.5 billion, down 3.6% over last year on tough industrial markets. Sales were down 26% in our industrial businesses, largely the agricultural business, down in markets that are dramatically down. Sales were actually up 7% in the mobility segment, with the launching business adding to market growth of 4.6%. Normalized net earnings were $150.1 million, or 5.9% of sales. Normalized EPS was $2.51, up 6.8% over last year on the backs of a very strong mobility segment. I'd summarize our results this quarter as being most impacted by, first, higher sales earnings in the mobility segment on that launching business and strong volume on key platforms. Secondly, operational improvements and cost reductions that are happening actually in both segments, as well as fixed and overhead cost reductions, and that being offset by those steep declines in the agricultural market. Cash flow strong at $321 million, as noted. We expect to continue to generate free cash flow in 2025 for another strongly positive result for the year. Finally, let's have a look at an update on the tariff side. Despite the myriad of tariffs put in place over the last couple of months, Linamar continues to have a manageable level of bottom-line impact. New in the quarter were tariffs announced on 232 metal product derivatives. So far, more than 900 categories of parts containing metal have been identified that are subject to 50% tariffs on the non-U.S. metal content of those products. This is having some impact to certain industrial segment products, not automotive. We are developing strategies to mitigate these costs as best possible, or I would say they are manageable and not impacting our bottom line materially. The balance of the tariffs are having no or minimal impact. I think there's really three key reasons for this. One, we have long followed a strategy of producing products in the same continent as our customers and not chasing low-cost labor around the world. As a result, we're not making products in Asia or Europe that ship to the U.S. and would trigger tariffs. Secondly, for products produced in Canada and Mexico, our products are USMCA compliant for virtually everything we ship into the U.S., meaning no tariffs for our customers on the mobility side, where they are the importer of record, or for us on our industrial products, where we are the importer of record and less caught by those 232 derivative tariffs that I just discussed. Our largest business is our automotive business, where our customers are the importer of record, and I think that's the third key element, and therefore those customers would be responsible for paying tariffs in the event any did become applicable, although happily none are as yet. I do worry about the growing impact of tariffs on our automaker customers as they continue to build up, whether it be for metal tariffs or vehicle tariffs or parts tariffs for their offshore purchases outside of North America. The costs for our customers, as we've seen, are in the billions, and I am concerned about potential impact to vehicle pricing and therefore demand longer term. On the positive side, we are seeing customers looking at onshoring parts and systems they are currently buying from Asia or Europe. We're building up a good list of new business opportunities and business wins for our North American plants in all of Canada, the U.S., and Mexico. The U.S. is still respecting the USMCA agreement, meaning these parts can be supplied from any of the three countries tariff-free as long as they are USMCA compliant. Where the job goes really depends on where we have capacity, experience, and teams available to take on the work, as well, of course, as customer preference. The tariff situation is also adding to stress in an already stressed supply base, notably in the U.S. and Europe, and this is leading to acquisition opportunities for us, as you saw us acting on in the quarter. Finally, I'd like to emphasize that our strong results and positive outlook is very much of a result of what I think is an excellent and unique business culture at Linamar. Our culture has been finely tuned over nearly 60 years to be opportunistic, entrepreneurial, and find something positive and actionable to grow our business regardless of circumstances. We're naturally responsive. We're nimble. We move fast. We're innovative. We're creative in deal-making and mitigating challenging situations, and we get things done. Those are the critical elements to not just survive, but thrive in a challenging time. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to our CEO, Jim Jarrell, to
Thank you, Mark.
Industry and operations updates in more detail.
Thank you, Linda, and great to be with everyone listening here tonight. As I've emphasized over the past few quarters, the theme you see on the screen remains our guiding focus at Linamar in 2025 and certainly will continue for the foreseeable future. Our commitment to growing revenue, profits, and growing our team is fundamental to our long-term success. We've certainly been saying the time we're in is a business person's nightmare, but an entrepreneur's dream. Volatility, limited visibility, macroeconomic headwinds are testing companies everywhere. Tariffs, shifting consumer demands, disruptive technologies, cost pressures, talent shortages, and regulatory changes are all part of that puzzle. But from our side, tough times don't last, tough teams do, and certainly Linamar is one tough team. And what sets us apart is our entrepreneurial mindset. We don't just react, we attack every challenge and opportunity with purpose. We stay true to our long-term vision, operate with lean discipline, and make agile, decisive moves. So with that, let me do an update on the quarter covering our two reporting segments and the markets we operate in. Let's start with the auto industry. Global production grew this quarter, North America up 4.1%, Europe 1%, and Asia Pacific leading with 5.8% growth. Forecasts for 25 have improved, not just to easing tariffs, but also because OEMs now have a clearer understanding and stronger plan for vehicle types and propulsion systems across global markets. North America is projected to be down just 2% versus 3.9% last quarter, Europe down 1.8 versus 2.5, and Asia up 4.4 versus 2.5, and that's driven by China's strength and tariff de-escalation. That would bring a global production up 2% for the year. Looking ahead to 2026, North America is expected to be down 2.6%, Europe and Asia relatively flat, resulting in a modest 0.5% global decline. Turning to Linamar's CPV performance for the quarter, we saw growth across all three key regions. North America grew 1.3%, Europe 1.2%, and Asia delivered exceptional growth of 21% year over year, really driven by program launches Linda mentioned and increased volumes on key platforms where Linamar has strong business. With growth in every region, global CPV rose 1.6% year over year, reinforcing the strength and consistency of our global footprint. In Q3, our commercial teams continued to deliver on our core goal, keep winning business. We secured $457 million in new business wins, with $195 million in body and chassis components, significantly expanding our position in key structural parts like cross members and knuckles. Linamar's longstanding strength in structural components, supported by recent acquisitions, position us well for continued growth. A major highlight, mobility new business wins now total over $1.8 billion in annualized value over the last 12 months. By staying focused, executing with discipline, and seizing opportunities in these times, we're reinforcing our position as a leading supplier. The biggest news that Linda highlighted is in the mobility. Two transformative acquisitions, Aludyne North America and York Fisher's Leipzig facility. Aludyne North America adds 13 facilities, 2,400 employees, and advanced casting technologies like squeeze casting and magnesium thin tech high-pressure die cast. With a strong portfolio of structural components, knuckles, shock towers, subframes, and rear axle housing, this acquisition boosts our content per vehicle and strengthens our leadership in lightweighting. Leipzig brings exceptional capabilities in large, single-piece casting, including one of the largest box sizes in Western Europe for production. Supported by 3D sand printing and high automation, it offers 350-plus products across 9 end markets and 40-plus customers, expanding our reach in the off-highway and industrial segments. Why these acquisitions? Simple. They fit perfectly. Aludyne and Leipzig bring advanced Casting Technologies. Both companies offer full-service design and engineering, giving Linamar full value chain coverage from design to validation to manufacturing, a major differentiator in a competitive market. Aludyne has reputational excellence and is a category killer in aluminum knuckles with leading market share in North America. Leipzig is a technology leader in Europe, known for high-quality ductile iron castings and innovation in off-highway applications. Together, they provide significant growth opportunities and bring over $1 billion in annualized revenue, expand our CPV with key customers, accretive day one, and operate within our target 7% to 10% OE margin range. Their strategic footprint, Aludyne in the U.S. and Leipzig near our European plants, enhance our ability to support OEMs locally and scale globally. These acquisitions were entrepreneurial, opportunistic, and were driven by innovation, reputation, and long-term growth. We're proud to welcome these teams to Linamar and excited to deliver even greater value to our customers. Turning to our industrial segment, starting with Skyjack and the aerial work platform market, while the market continues to face headwinds from interest rates, tariff pressures, and delayed infrastructure projects, signs of recovery are emerging. Despite these challenges, Skyjack delivered an outstanding Q3, growing unit volumes by 46% in a market that was down 9.3% globally. Year-to-date, Skyjack is up 11.3%, outperforming a market that's down 23.3%. The success is driven by exceptional market share gains, especially in scissor lifts globally and booms in Europe. It's a clear signal that Skyjack is winning with our innovation and customer connectivity. It's important to note that volume growth doesn't always translate directly to revenue, as product mix plays a key role, with booms, telehandlers commanding higher prices than scissors. Dale will touch upon that again, but the real story here is Skyjack's ability to gain share and strengthen its position in a tough market. On the innovation front, Skyjack was awarded the 2025 Rental Editor's Choice Award in Micro X-Step Scissor Lift, designed for maximum productivity in tight spaces. They also launched the E-Drive Scissor Lift, offering the highest working height in their range with zero emissions and lower operating costs, a win for customers and sustainability. In this time frame we're in, Skyjack is not just navigating the storm, it's leading the way forward. Turning to agriculture, while the market remains challenged, Linamar continues to perform and innovate. As the 2025 growing season wraps up, North American harvests are strong, but low commodity prices and trade issues are limiting exports and farmer profitability. Still, U.S. farmer sentiment is resilient, and federal payments are expected to drive demand into 2026. Dealer inventories and credit lines are easing, though still elevated, which is holding back whole goods stocking. In Europe, wheat crops are strong, corn yields are down due to drought and heat stress, and in northern Russia, we are seeing their best crops in 3 years. In Australia, soil moisture is solid in key regions, and China presents a major canola opportunity as Canada faces tariffs. Despite high inventories and macro pressures like interest rates and stimulus uncertainty, the 25 outlook remains unchanged. North America down 30%, Europe down 5%, and the rest of the world flat. Our Linamar Ag divisions, MacDon, Salford, and Borgo, are tracking with the market, down 29% in volume, but gaining share in key products and regions. Timing of deliveries and inventory pull ahead impact mix, but our teams continue to outperform. On the innovation front, Salford launched the AB230 air boom, engineered for the Case Trident dry high flow equipment. It delivers faster speed, higher rates, great coverage, and less compaction, driving maximum productivity and nutrient accuracy. While market cycles are beyond our control, our focus on innovation, execution, and customer value keeps us ahead. We're building strength today to lead tomorrow. With that, I'll turn it over to Dale for a deeper dive into our financials.
Thank you, Jim. Good afternoon, everyone. Linda covered at a high level the financial performance in the quarter, so I'll jump directly into the business segment review, starting with mobility. Mobility sales increased by $127.6 million, or 7.1% over last year, to $1.9 billion. This growth was driven by a significant increase in sales from launching programs, higher volumes through mature programs, and foreign exchange impacts compared to Q3 last year. These gains are partially offset by lower volumes on electric vehicle programs and reduced production for certain engine programs. Q3 normalized operating earnings for mobility were up 87.7% over last year to 165.9 million. The strong improvement was driven by a significant increase in the sales from launching programs, the higher volumes on mature programs, and benefits from operational efficiencies, cost reductions, and a favorable product mix. Turning to industrial, sales decreased by 26.3% or 221.6 million to 619.7 million in Q3. The decrease was primarily driven by significantly lower agricultural sales in a sharply down market. Additionally, access equipment sales were marginally reduced due to the softer market demand. However, this was largely offset by strong market share gains in scissors and continued boom market share growth in Europe. Normalized industrial operating earnings in Q3 decreased by 78.5 million or 56% over last year to 61.7 million. This decline was primarily driven by significantly lower agricultural sales. These pressures were partially offset by improvements from operational efficiencies and cost reductions. Starting with our overall cash position, which came in at 1.2 billion on September 30th, an increase of 407.9 million compared to September last year. Third quarter generated 389.7 million in cash from operating activities, being partially used to fund our Q3 CapEx and debt repayments. Turning to leverage, net debt to EBITDA was at 0.8 times in the quarter, an improvement from 1.1 times last year. The amount of available credit on our credit facilities was 978.2 million at the end of the quarter. Our liquidity at the end of Q3 significantly increased and was very strong at 2.2 billion. Our 2024 NCIB program launched at Q3 2024 earnings call will expire on November 14th. This program authorized the purchase and cancellation of up to 4 million shares. To date, we have returned nearly 100 million dollars to shareholders through the repurchase of approximately 1.8 million shares. The TSX has approved the renewal of Linamar's NCIB program for the next 12 months. Under this renewed program, we may repurchase and cancel up to 3.9 million shares, representing 10% of our public float between November 17, 2025, and November 16, 2026. We have also implemented an automatic share purchase plan to enable repurchases during blackout periods. This initiative reflects our disciplined capital allocation strategy, maintaining a strong balance sheet, investing in growth, and returning excess cash to shareholders, particularly in today's uncertain market environment. Turning to outlook, I will outline Linamar's expectations for 2025, focusing on mobility and industrial segments. Our guidance for 2025 is generally consistent with what was announced at our last earnings call, with only a few notable updates. Please note we are not providing segment-level guidance for 2026 at this time due to the elevated volatility in the markets and ongoing geopolitical uncertainty, which makes longer-term segment forecasts less reliable. Our guidance for mobility segment in 2025 is largely unchanged from what was said at our last earnings call. We continue to expect sales growth and double-digit normalized operating earnings growth, driven by operational improvements, cost reductions, and new program launches. These margins are forecasted to expand and remain within our normal range of 7%-10%. What's new, we are now including a small increase in sales from the acquisition of Aludyne's North American operations, which will further support our growth trajectory. We are also starting to experience some effects from the Novelis fire, Xperia chip shortages, and the JLR cyber attack. However, these industry challenges are evolving rapidly, and it is still too early to assess their full impact on our business. Guidance for industrial segment also remains consistent with our previous outlook and continued expectations for double-digit declines in both sales and normalized operating earnings, reflecting the ongoing market declines in the ag sector and the softness in the access equipment markets. What's new, margins are now expected to contract and fall below our normal range of 14%-18%. We are now starting to feel some impacts on tariffs, primarily in the industrial business, but as Linda mentioned, these are manageable and not material. At a consolidated level, our guidance is generally unchanged from the last call. We expect a modest decline in sales for 2025, with normalized EPS projected to grow and net earnings expected to expand. Free cash flow generation remains strongly positive, supporting a very strong balance sheet and solid leverage. What's new is CapEx as a percentage of sales now expected to decline from prior year and remain below our normal range of 6-8%, reflecting our disciplined CapEx reallocation process. Looking ahead to 2026, the guidance remains broadly consistent with our previous discussions. We anticipate continued growth in sales, net margins, and EPS, supported by strong free cash flow generation and a robust balance sheet. While softness in the industrial markets will moderate its contribution, the strength of the mobility segment is expected to more than offset this impact, resulting in overall consolidated growth. What's new, the mobility segment is expected to deliver ongoing sales and earnings growth, benefiting from a full year of contributions from both the Aludyne North American operations and the York Fisher Leipzig casting facility. As a result, we are now expecting sales growth to improve from modest growth to a more substantial increase. Capital expenditures are anticipated to rise from prior year, though they will remain below our normal range. Our projections reflect only the impacts that are currently known for tariffs, the Novelis fire, Experience Assurance, and the JLR cyberattack, as the uncertainty remains regarding the full extent of these issues. In summary, Linamar's guidance for 2025 and 2026 is generally unchanged from our last earnings call, with only a few updates reflecting recent developments. Our operational discipline, strategic acquisitions, and strong free cash flow generation continue to support our financial strength and resilience. Thank you, and I'd like to open up the call for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Should you have a question, please press the star followed by the one on your touch tone phone. You will hear a prompt that your hand has been raised. Should you wish to decline from the polling process, please press star followed by the two. If you're using a speakerphone, please lift the handset before pressing any keys. One moment, please, for your first question. Your first question comes from Ty Collins with CIBC. Please go ahead.
Hey, good evening. Thanks for taking my questions. Maybe just want to start off on the ag business. I'm wondering if you could kind of expand on what sort of visibility or indications you have so far into 2026, now that we're later in the year. And are you still optimistic that this year will be the bottom, or is there a risk that the cycle might be a little more protracted and kind of bounce along the bottom next year?
Yeah, I mean, ag cycles are typically down for 2 to 3 years. So, you know, this is the second year of a down market for the ag business. So it would not be abnormal for next year to be down as well. We're waiting to give a more specific outlook for 2026 for the time being, but I could go either way, frankly. It could be another soft market, or we could see some rebound. I think we'll have a better sense come March for what we're going to see in that market.
Yeah, maybe just a couple things to keep in mind. As Linda said, like the 2-3 year cycle is something that we've seen in the past. But I mean, what we talked about in the notes there was farmer sentiment still is pretty strong. Other things that we also see is dealers are sort of concerned about new and used inventory levels. So orders are being affected at this point in time. Again, crops have been great. And then if you look at the farm net cash income, that it's basically flat, but it's up with a $40 billion sort of incentive from the government, but that has not been paid out. So there's a reluctance of dealers to buy at this point in time. Once that $40 billion, gets out in the U.S., that may, bring on some encouragement of that. And then still in 26, there's not a good understanding what incentive base would be out there as well. So it's a really difficult one to make a call on. And when you look at what CNH has said and AGCO and these others, they are very much in the same mode that they just don't know where this is going to play out next year.
Okay, that's really helpful color. And then sticking on the ag business, I mean, it seems like that segment went from kind of taking share in the first half of the year to sort of declining more in line with the market as of the end of this quarter. I mean, is there anything to call out there in terms of execution or dynamics within your distribution channels?
I mean, I wouldn't read too much into that. I mean, one quarter to the next, it could just be timing of deliveries. If I look at year to date, we're still seeing market share growth on the ag side. So I wouldn't read too much into that.
I think timing, what Linda said, timing is also an important factor for that, right? Because we're tracking the market of large tractors and combines, and the timing of taking a short line piece of equipment is going to be different too. So I think that what Linda said, year to date, is really the key thing to be looking at.
Okay, got it. And if I could just sneak one more in on the buyback, I think last quarter you indicated that you expected to sort of step up buyback activity in the third quarter. I appreciate that probably was put on the back burner given some of the M&A activity, but now that that's through, can you maybe just update us on your thinking in terms of resuming buyback activity in the near term?
Yeah, you identified it absolutely correctly. We were prioritizing the M&A activity in the quarter, and we absolutely intend to be back out buying as soon as blackout's over.
Great, thanks for the questions.
Your next question comes from Brian Morrison with TD Cowen. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much. First question maybe for Jim on mobility. I mean, this is best-in-class margins. Your cadence has gone up 100 basis points sequentially each quarter this year to 8.6%. So is there anything like recoveries or one-time items in this quarter? Are we stating that it's simply operational excellence and it's sustainable? And can you just clarify for me, are the new launches, typically they take time to ramp to their target margin. Are they actually being margin enhancing?
Well, I think you've hit a few of the different things. I think launches are starting to see the fruits of the launch. I think the volumes on some of the mix programs on some of the key programs are very good that we're seeing. And certainly, I think our CAT system, our operational elimination of waste culture is playing out. I mean, we are hopeful to keep ourselves into this margin at this time, and for the foreseeable future, it looks that way.
I would just say that if they're adding to the strong result this quarter was a somewhat favorable product mix, which can shift around. But Jim's right, being mid range is probably a pretty realistic expectation.
And mid range being 8.5, Linda, correct?
Just that 7 to 10% range that we normally target.
Okay. And then maybe just in terms of takeover business, I assume that the new businesses that you've taken on, I assume that there's restructuring of contracts and these margins will be in line or with your current performance in mobility?
Yeah, I think you're talking the acquisitions or takeover business that we chased.
Yeah. Sorry, your acquisitions, okay. But I assume it would be...
Oh, on the acquisitions, yeah, we're going to be in the range, right, per that we declare the 7 to 10%. So middle of the range, keep that in your mind, as Linda said. Each one of these, Aludyne has a North American footprint. We have a game plan on how to operate that going forward. So that's a pretty focused plan. And then the Leipzig facility is one facility over there with 300 teammates. Again, both of these accretive day one, both get us about $1 billion of sales, Brian, and really in the normal range of operating margin.
Okay. Just quickly on industrial, I assume, thank you for the ag answers, but in terms of Skyjack, I presume, is this growth predominantly coming in North America with the scissors, or is it more international side that we're seeing with your new facilities?
It's a little bit of both, but I would say the most of it would be North American scissors, and European would be the boom side. And again, as I think Carolyn and I highlighted, it's, you know, the revenue side doesn't just, you know, match to the increase in volume because scissors obviously are a little less in the sell price.
For sure. I get
that. It's actually great to see the share growth that we're seeing on scissors in North America. It's been very solid.
For sure. For sure. Linda, last question. I think this quarter, you know, we've talked about this many times, but this quarter certainly justifies your view of diversification. So I'm going to come at this a little bit differently. So your valuation, I mean, look, it's below average, it's below auto peers, it's below industrial peers. Your free cash flow is clearly very impressive. You got minimal leverage. You're a bit heavier now with your acquisitions in terms of mobility, but like, would you consider, I understand you're going to be active with your buyback, but would you consider alternatives that would substantially enhance shareholder value, such as like a substantial issuer bid?
Yeah, I mean, it's not something that we have looked at. I feel like that we're considering, I should say, in any seriousness. And that's really just because there's so much opportunity out there in terms of growth, whether it be takeover business or acquisition opportunities, that the last thing I want to do is tie up a huge amount of capital in doing a substantial issuer bid when I would much rather be buying a business or funding organic growth.
Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from Michael Glen with Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Hey, good evening. Just to start, could we just go back and dig into the Skyjack outperformance again? It's just the numbers that you're indicating are just quite substantial. So I'm really, maybe it's a function of needing to repeat it again, but these gains, like, can you give some quantification of where your market share, how much your market share has increased, what you're doing with pricing overall on product, any additional insights into where you're getting these gains from?
I think the market share on our scissors is the technology and probably our commercial, you know, ability to have a better commercial setup for our customers on the scissor side.
Yeah, I mean, we are absolutely growing scissor market share. As already noted here in North America, we're growing boom market share in Europe, which has been a real target for us. So it's great to see that. I'd just like to reiterate again what Jim has said a couple of times now, that 46% increase in volume does not in any way result in 46% increase in sales. So if you're selling a lot more scissors and not as many telehandlers or booms, then, you know, that has a material difference on the sales front. So please don't read into the 46% volume increase that we increased sales like that at Skyjack. I think the more relevant point is we're growing market share. And I think that's actually fantastic, especially here in North America and in the U.S. where, you know, we have all the, you know, tariff situation going on and all of the focus in that regard. So I think that's a huge plus and a huge kudos to the Skyjack team for managing that.
And the other point that I just forgot about product development, like we've come out with a lot of new products also. So that also would give you some, you know, benefit as well.
Okay. And you are or were the largest market share already with scissor lifts in North America?
Yes, I believe that's true.
Okay. And just to go back to Brian's question on the margins, a lot of your peers are speaking about commercial recoveries or commercial settlements. you didn't state that as one of the items impacting margins. I just wanted to clarify, like, there were no outsized recoveries or settlements in the quarter for the mobility margin?
No. No, nothing of substantial other than maybe engineering changes or whatever would be typical, but nothing out there. You know, quite frankly, in our mindset is we got to think, you know, towards helping customers through productivity longer term here, right? That's sort of the natural way of the game has been played for decades. So our view is, as we get better, we should share some of the improvements, and that helps us gain new business as well. So we'd be, you know, also working on that.
Michael, as we've talked about, most of our commercial issues were resolved, you know, late last year or the Q1 of this year. So as Jim said, there's really nothing flowing through in this quarter.
Nothing new. I mean, obviously, if we had commercial agreements a year ago for price changes, then that's going to continue to, you know, deliver from then forward.
Okay. And so it's $1 billion combined for Aludyne and GF. Can you give the number for each acquisition?
Yeah. I mean, Aludyne was around $800 million in sales, and
That's about $850-$150. That's the split, right? Aludyne, 850 dollars, and 150, sorry, Leipzig. Yeah. And so one plant, Michael, and then Aludyne is the 13.
Okay. And then just when we think about M&A just right now in the mobility segment, should we think about M&A dollars really be focused with mobility given the takeover work and some of the distressed opportunities emerging?
I mean, it's across the board, I would say. There's no shortage of opportunities. I would say there's a lot higher level of distress in the mobility side, for sure, but there is a lot of other activity in the industrial side that we're seeing as well. You know, a lot of stuff is sprouting out of Europe, of course. That's got a lot more drag on the market there. So again, you know, we come at this very opportunistic based on our customers sort of saying, "Hey, you know, we'd like Linamar, you guys, to jump in to see if we can make something happen," and working alongside the customers because I think they have a high degree of trust in us to be able to execute and, you know, have a sustainable long-term company.
Okay. Thank you for taking the question.
Your next question comes from Jonathan Goldman with Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, and thanks for taking my questions. Maybe just circling back on the mobility margins. You did 8.6% in the quarter. If you look at the same quarter, Q3 in 2019, you did 7.5%. You go back a year, 2018, you did 6.5%. So 200 basis points delta, 100 basis points delta. Looks like volumes currently are kind of below those levels previously, maybe in line. Just could you help us think about what's driving the delta there? You did call out a few items, but if we have same volumes, what's really driving the expansion relative to those 2018, 2019 levels?
Yeah. I mean, I just reiterate the key things that we've already mentioned. Launch is gaining traction. That obviously makes a big difference. Solid volumes on mature programs, so programs we have good content on, platforms we have good content on that are actually running pretty strong. Great cost improvement work by the plants. There's some overhead reduction that we did as well, just in, you know, terms of overall economic conditions. A little bit favorable on the product mix. Some of the price increases negotiated a year ago that, you know, have been long on the table that are obviously going to be part of the year-over-year comparison. You know, all of that is adding up to the strong results. So, you know, and all of that is sustainable, okay? So we, you know, we feel like being in that mid part of the range. I mean, obviously, Q4 would be a little lower just given, you know, shutdowns, etc. That's pretty normal to see Q4 margins a little softer. But if I'm looking out through next year, I think, you know, mid of that range is probably not unrealistic for the full year performance.
The one thing I would also mention Q4 is, Dale mentioned in his comments is, some of the disruption stuff, right? That, we're still not clear in our minds how that'll shake out with, the Novelis with the Ford aluminum side, Nexperia, and some of the JLR. Some of that still, we're sort of thinking through for Q4, but those should all get flushed through the system in Q4, and we should be, like full throttle, I think, in next year.
That's a good point. If we do think about this as a baseline maybe going forward, if we strip out volume and supply chain issues, is there more that you guys can do on these structural internal initiatives to maybe build on the margin expansion you already have?
I mean, I think that 8.5% is pretty good. We're pretty happy with that.
Yeah. We never stop. I mean, our whole culture is about taking waste out. We never stop. I think, the normal range, 7%-10% is very good. If we can be middle of the road on that, that's excellent from an operational standpoint.
Yeah. 100%.
Understood. Then I guess another one, Linda. I appreciate your comments on not wanting to tie up capital to the balance sheet with buybacks and thinking about growth and M&A. What's the appetite for large-scale M&A? Specifically, I'm thinking about aerial work platform assets that may be coming to the market in the near term.
Yeah. I mean, we like to run a conservative balance sheet. That said, I mean, we have let ourselves go above, our target range of 1.5 if we felt like we had, a really good line of sight to bringing it down under that 1.5 quite quickly. Have we entertained bigger acquisitions in the past? Yes, we have. I mean, we've certainly done that and gone above our 1.5. If we felt that we had that good line of sight and also the people to manage something. I'm obviously not going to comment on specific potential targets. I think there's actually quite a lot of, bigger, opportunities out there that, could be interesting, but it's got to make sense financially. It's got to make sense in terms of technology. It's got to make sense in terms of our ability to take on that opportunity. You're not going to see us put ourselves unduly at risk, that's for sure. But we do have, we're in a very strong position right now. I think that gives us flexibility to do a variety of things.
Nope. That's good color. Thanks for taking my questions. I'll get back in queue.
Your next question comes from Étienne Ricard with BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Okay. Thank you and good evening. Just to circle back on M&A, you sound quite optimistic about more acquisition opportunities. How do you think about the pace of integrations? In other words, are you capacity constrained in terms of the executive team integrating these businesses, or do you think you can continue to do more?
I mean, the two that we're doing right now fit perfectly into our organizational structure. Quite frankly, in the Europe, in the Leipzig facility, it's actually going to get, some help that we're going to get as well. That actually can really boost our, technical ability back wheel over there. Over here, it fits right into our structures group. We've got, it manned and everybody is there to start day one. Yeah, I think we've got a good play right now. Again, it depends on the acquisition. The Mobex that we bought a few years ago, that was distressed financially. It was distressed operationally. That takes a lot more horsepower. The Aludyne acquisition was distressed financially, but operationally it was very, very good. It depends on the acquisition, how you will play it out. I think we still have horsepower, to deal with a few of these other distressed things.
As Jim points out, we've got different groups in different areas. I mean, on the agricultural side, on the access side, we've got Europe, we've got North America. It's not just one team. We don't integrate these acquisitions from a corporate level. We do it at a group level, and we've got a lot of great horsepower at the group level to manage those integrations.
Okay, appreciate the details. And in mobility, how do you expect the pace of new awards to trend over the foreseeable future, given the trade uncertainty? In other words, could we see more contract extensions?
I think so. I think we've seen a pullback, I mean, pretty clear pullback in North America on EV. And Mark, maybe give some color on the...
Well, I think we're not seeing, a reduction in our opportunities of new business wins. There's just not a lot of new programs in regards to like what we've seen in the past, but we have a lot of activity in regards to the takeover business, especially in Europe, where we're starting to see customers moving business from, financially strapped suppliers, whereas in the past they would continue to work with them. And, I think there's a different sort of feeling in regards to the European OEMs to move product out, and we're seeing and have been able to win a fairly significant amount of business in Europe and seeing a lot of opportunities there. In North America, there's obviously the battery electric vehicle, not a lot of activity, but we are seeing areas around the electrification on range extenders in regards to, pickup trucks. A lot of the OEMs are working on a few programs with that. We are seeing some engine development programs for engines, both pure ICE and hybrid applications for emissions coming up in 2029. So we continue to see a lot. And obviously, the acquisition, from Mobex and now this one with Aludyne, a lot of opportunity on the structural chassis side in regards to both ICE, hybrid, and battery electric vehicle.
Yeah, and one other thing on the growth side, which we didn't talk about, but when you think about, the one big beautiful bill, and you think about, Canada, Carney's Build Canada plan, that's, obviously great for Skyjack and things like that, but it also has major impact on our mobility business and manufacturing because, U.S. data centers, you've got, massive gen sets and all these things that we supply into those companies that supply those. So there's another whole category of growth that we're also pursuing in both of those, industrial as well as mobility.
Thank you very much.
There are no further questions at this time. I will now turn the call over to Linda Hasenfratz for closing remarks. Please continue.
Okay, to wrap up, I'd like to leave you with our key message for the quarter, which is exactly where we started out. First, Linamar is being entrepreneurial. We're being opportunistic. We've already secured over $1 billion of revenue and growth for 2026 in a challenging environment with our two new acquisitions. Secondly, we're seeing excellent growth of nearly 90% in our mobility segment earnings, thanks to outstanding work at our global plants. Third, we're generating exceptional levels of free cash flow to fund those acquisition opportunities and organic growth while still keeping our strong balance sheet intact. And finally, not only is the tariff situation manageable, but we are actively levering such to find new opportunities for growth. Thanks very much, everybody, and have a great evening.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.